Hi, this is Bruce Ryder, Five Finger Death Punch, and you're listening to the Jay Franzi Show.
Welcome to the Jay Franzi Show, a behind-the-curtain look at the entertainment industry with insights you can't pay for and stories you've never heard. Now, here's your host, Jay Franzi.
Well, hello and welcome to the show. I am Jay Franzi, and if you are new here, this is where we take a deep dive into the entertainment industry to provide you with valuable insights and entertaining stories. This week, we get to talk with an award-winning author. We get to talk with Martin Straps. We'll talk to him about how he got to start writing, what inspires him, and we'll take a deep dive into his writing process. Now, I've known Martin for some time now, and I can't wait to talk with him tonight. So if you'd like to join in, comment, or fire off any questions, please head over to jfranzi.com. Now let's get started. Sir, how are you? It is good to have you back.
I'm doing fantastic. I'm honored to be back. I had a fantastic time the first time around. Always a good time, but you know what? I'm happy to get some one-on-one Jay Franzi time. I need it.
There you go. You might be regretting that comment at the end of the show, but we'll see. All right. Well, let's just jump right in, sir. What is the inspiration behind your writing?
That's a fantastic question. So I'd say the first answer is probably the simplest answer. I'm a big fan of storytelling since I was a kid in any form, particularly like when I was a kid. I think I loved nothing more than when the grownups were around. Maybe they slipped a few cocktails into their coffee and they were just telling fun stories around the table while they were playing canasta or whatever. And I absolutely loved that. And I also loved, you know, from a young age, absolutely loved watching TV. It hasn't changed. TV, movies, comic books, anything that had stories, I was totally engaged with. And the thing is, particularly when I was a kid, I didn't actually make a connection, I think, to what I loved so much. You know, as I got older, I began to recognize, you know, the thread through everything, the drunk relative telling stories, the TV, the comic books, the movies, all of it was storytelling. And I was very much enamored by the people who created stories, particularly on TV. Cause as a kid, I had no concept of writers. In that case, it'd be, you know, a screenwriter. So when I was watching a TV show, I just assumed that, you know, these people got in front of the camera and they were improvising. I didn't know the word improv as a kid. I just thought they were riffing it. I was amazed. And then of course, at some point when I learned that, you know, somebody behind the scenes before they ever pressed record crafted that something about that captured my imagination. And so at some point I decided to try it myself and just fell in love with it ever since.
So how has your writing evolved over the years?
So the funny thing is when I first really, truly endeavored to become a writer, it was my first year in college. So I started school at Chaffee Community College. That's in Rancho Cucamonga, California, which is where I grew up. So even though I'm a local Nevadian, I actually grew up in Southern California. And so when I went to college, I knew that I was interested in writing and I wanted to merge my love of movies and writing. So I had genuinely no thoughts about writing novels or, you know, prose fiction, as we would call it. Nothing at all. Like I wanted to write screenplays. And aside from my love of writing, a lot of that came from the Academy Awards and you know, being young and watching the Academy Awards and being enamored with the celebrities and the beautiful speeches and the nice clothes and the beautiful people. And I was like, that looks like a great party. I want to go to that party. And so, as dumb as it kind of sounds, I was kind of going through the checkbox. I was like, well, I'm not an actor, I'm not a director. I don't know what a producer does. Writers get awards. You know, I know how to spell, so how hard can it be to write? And I wish I could say that was a joke, but that's kind of the thought process I went through. So that was my thought is, okay, let me get into screenwriting so then I can sort of do this thing that I'm enamored with and maybe, you know, get invited to the big fancy party. So my first year in college, I wanted to sign up for a screenwriting class. They didn't have any available, but they had a prose fiction class. I didn't know what prose fiction was. It's just, you know, it's just the writing that you see in books and whatnot. So I thought, okay, well, I'll take that class because if nothing else, you know, maybe I'll get some kind of foundation for storytelling, and then I'll roll that into my future Academy Award winning screenwriting career. And it was not my intention, but I fell in love with prose fiction. I discovered that this was a form of writing that I loved a lot. Before that, I assumed I wouldn't like it because there's so many damn words. And I thought, who has time to put that many words in a row on a page? And, you know, screenwriting, you just, you know, a few words allude to what's going on and then you're set. But I really fell in love with it. And around the same time, because I also wasn't a big reader, which used to embarrass me, because especially as, you know, as you so kindly put, you know, as an award-winning writer, I don't like telling people I didn't really read a lot growing up, because I feel like there should be sort of like a mythology of like when I was like 2 years old and I picked up my first book and I fell in love with it ever since. But that wasn't the case with me. But about the same time, again, my first year in college, I did discover a love for reading. I read, I don't want to say I read my first book in college, because that sounds terrible. Like, I've been reading for a very long time, you know, I knew him very well. But I read, you know, my first novel front to back in a way that I felt like I engaged with it in the way that you're supposed to engage with a book, in terms of it sort of, you know, capturing your imagination, kind of seeing what's happening, really feeling, you know, emotion and joy and pathos and all the things that you get with a good story. It was The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, for anybody who's keeping score, which, by the way, if somebody was like, hey, I want to get into reading, that's not the book I would tell them to read. But for whatever reason, that one hit the right switch in my brain, and I kind of went from there. So it was really kind of a nice symbiotic, discovered a love for reading. I kind of quickly went into Stephen King after that.
Starting light.
But yeah, let me read some more books now that I've discovered this thing. I was like 18 years old. Went into Barnes & Noble and realized very quickly, I don't know what to get. I don't know anybody. The only writer I've ever heard of is Stephen King. So let me find the Stephen King section. Turns out he doesn't have his own section. He kind of does. You go to the horror section, it's all Stephen King. But so then I picked up Insomnia by Stephen King. It was like 700 or 800 pages, which is the reason I picked it up. I wanted to test my new reading superpower. Yeah. So anyway, discovered a love for reading prose fiction. And then I found out I wasn't good at it, by the way. I want to make that very clear. In fact, I was objectively bad at it. But I enjoyed the process of learning how to do it, and I wanted to kind of build on that.
It's too funny. I laugh because you mentioned not reading, and then obviously you're writing. And yeah. My wife laughs at me all the time because I don't read at all. I have a very hard time reading. Have to read extremely slow to comprehend anything. Mm-hmm. But I've written 4 books. So writing's not the problem. It's reading that's the problem.
Like you, I'm a slow reader. If I'm feeling self-conscious, I'll call myself a deliberate reader, but that sounds better. But really, I'm just a slow reader. You know, I'll pick up a book and I'm enjoying it. And I might read it every day. And even reading it every day, you know, if I finish a book in a month, that's a fast read for me. I'm lucky. I'm so darn lucky. I've got a lot of people who've read my books. And, you know, when I have the opportunity or the good fortune to meet a reader and they say, you know, I loved your book and I couldn't put it down and I finished it in one day. I don't say it out loud, but my thought is, take your time. It took me about 5 years to write that. So savor it. I don't know when the next one's coming out.
That's crazy. I couldn't finish a book in a day if I wanted to.
I couldn't. The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, by the way, I finished that in 3 days, and that was a huge, I'd never, ever in my life finished a book that quickly before. It was for a college course. I think there was a certain amount of, first of all, I was thinking I may as well drop out of college because there's no way I'm going to finish this book. I think the teacher gave us a month. I was like, well, okay. It was a history class, by the way. It wasn't even an English class, but anyway, I had a month to read it, so I got the book. And so I was trying to math it out. I'm not good at math, by the way. I was like, let me math it out. It's got this many pages. I got this many days to read it. If I kind of, you know, read this many pages a day. I remember going into my backyard thinking like maybe something with nature will unlock whatever. I was grasping at any possible thing to help me get into this book. And so the first day was a disaster. The second day I get back into the book and I think I kind of gave up hope, which was maybe part of it. Maybe that's the secret, is I gave up hope, which sort of probably just like relaxed my brain. And then I just, you know, start reading the pages and totally without trying to, or even, I don't even know exactly when it happened, but I'm reading this book and not literally, but you could figure this out. The words on the page went away and it was just like the prose was projecting a movie into my head. And I was watching the story of this this immigrant character, Jurgis, and he came to America and he was trying to make money and he had this young wife and she was pregnant and people were dying and he had to shovel manure. And I was like feeling everything. And I was like, I was in there and I was engaged and I was flipping the pages. And then at some point I stopped reading because I was like, oh my goodness, I think I'm reading. I think this is what reading is. I think this is what reading is supposed to feel like. And then I got so nervous that I stopped reading. I was like, what if this was my one chance to read? And it never happens again. So then I get back into the book, and then you know, within a couple pages, it happens again. And 3 days later, I finished this book, and I was like, I think that this must be reading. This must be the thing that people have enjoyed that I could never quite get a grasp on. And my tastes have evolved. Like, I still enjoy Stephen King very much, but then, you know, over the years, I've little by little discover new authors. So part of my sort of evolution as a reader, which sort of affected my evolution as a writer, is... So Stephen King, he's a fantastic storyteller. He's a terrific writer. But then, you know, over the years, I would discover writers who, even more than their storytelling, I fell in love with the writing itself, which when I was 18, I didn't make that distinction. But I discovered, not unlike anything else, movies, TV, whatever, you know, there could be a terrific story, but there's also a craft to it. And sometimes the craft is so good that you enjoy that as much, if not more, than, you know, the story that you're engaging with. And so some of my favorite writers over the years that I collected are, you know, like Tom Robbins, Nick Hornby, Tim O'Brien, he's a big one. Chuck Palahniuk. Oh, I love Chuck Palahniuk. So he's most famous for writing Fight Club, which is, you know, it's a wonderful movie. I love the movie. Fantastic book. A lot of books that I've discovered, again, over the last, you know, 25 some odd years since I've discovered a love for reading and writing, have actually been connected to movies. Because, you know, if I'm watching a movie I'm enjoying and the credits say based on a book, I'm immediately curious. So then I'll usually go to the source material. And more times than not, I end up enjoying it. So Fight Club was one of those. And so then Chuck Palahniuk, I started reading more of his books. He's terrific. So anyway, with that, as far as my evolution as a writer, that affected the way I perceive, you know, writing and storytelling, to where I almost went too much the other way, where I became hyper-focused on the craft and the words and the sentence structure. And I thought, you know, that's where the gold is. Don't worry about the story. Just put together an interesting sentence and people will fall in love with your writing. And it turns out that's not true. And what I've learned since I published my first book is readers in general, not every reader, but readers in general, they want a good story. And just like me, as a kid, when I was, you know, listening to the relatives tell stories, really that's what folks want. So kind of what I do now is, you know, I'm working on my sixth book. It's my fifth novel, but it's my sixth book altogether. And really with all my books, but this one in particular, I'm just hyper-focused on the story and the characters and the story arc and the subplots and really putting something together that, you know, like if somebody, you know, wants to take my book and go down to the beach and enjoy it, they'll be able to do that. But if the reader happens to be like me and they do appreciate the craft, they'll still find it in there. I just, you know, over the years, just for me, figured out the story has to come first and then the craft. And you know, and there's some of my favorite books they're light on story, but heavy on craft. And I love them. That's probably getting more into, you know, like literary fiction, which I love literary fiction. But one of the things with literary fiction is they kind of have the benefit of being light on story because folks are more interested in the crafts and the metaphors and sort of the themes and the larger meanings. But then the other sort of, I don't know, maybe the dirty secret, we'll call it, is those books don't do very well. And so because that, generally speaking, you know, if you win the Pulitzer Prize, that's probably going to help your book sales. But by and large, they don't do particularly well. And publishers know that. And so for me, like when I see a literary fiction book make it to the book, to, you know, to the shelves of Barnes and Noble, I'm excited for that person because I know like how hard it is to get a literary story all the way to the finish line. Whereas like genre fiction, which is primarily going to be story heavy. So, you know, whether it's sci-fi, horror, romance, fantasy, those books, it's not that they're easy to publish, but publishers are more likely to publish that one just because they have a better chance at, you know,
selling them,
getting their money back.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible to combine both?
Yes, absolutely. And again, if I'm doing my job, right, on my craft, I always aim for both. And one of the things that I like to think works in my favor from a young age, that my first real love with storytelling, aside from, you know, the tipsy relatives, was television and movies. And in my favorite television shows and movies, again, they had really engaging stories. I didn't fully understand what it was that was drawing me in. But over the years, I began to recognize that that's what I loved. And so I think what happened is, especially because it happened at such a young, impressionable age, that as many hours as I was awake, I was watching TV. And if I could go to the movies, especially at the movie theaters, it was always a very exciting special occasion. My parents were usually taking me two or three times a week because, you know, if you go on the weekdays and they have the discounts. So for me, I think what happened was I was a sponge. Just sort of unintentionally was like a sponge for the types of stories that were being told in television and movies and that type of storytelling structure. So when I write now, as much as I enjoy reading books and as much as I enjoy prose fiction, the larger influence really is television and movies. And so for me, I think of a novel kind of like one season of a TV show. So, you know, and if it's one single book, it's kind of like maybe like a limited 12 episodes, you know, season. But I very much think of my books like a TV show. And so because I love TV so much and I've watched, even today, I watch as much TV as I can because I love it so much. So, you know, when I write a book, I think the structure of it story-wise comes from an already popular medium of storytelling. And then it's filtered through my love of prose fiction and even literary fiction to a larger degree. Because I'll still at times, you know, labor over, you know, a sentence or a paragraph. If I get the impression that, you know, I think I'm onto something, like this sounds, I think I have a chance to make this paragraph special if I really dig in and get the words just right and craft it just so. And there's always a voice in the back of my head that's like, you know, like you realize most readers aren't going to pick up on, you know, how much work you put into this one paragraph. And then it pours in my head. It's like, I know, but like, I'll know. And they're going to love it. They might not know why they loved it, but like, I'll know that part of it was that I was sweating over this one paragraph on page 110. They're not going to know why they love that page so much, but if they ask me, I'll be able to tell them that, you know, because literally, again, the book I'm working on right now, I'm in the fifth draft of it. So, you know, really kind of, you know, sweating over it. And a lot of it is getting the story just right. So I feel like I've got the story just right. So now it's just a lot of fine tuning with the craft of it. And so I had a chapter that I was working on. It was just, you know, for future reference, I think it was chapter 32. I could be wrong, but you know, for anybody who reads my future book, they'll kind of know what I'm talking about. And for probably a week, I kept going back to like the first page and I would think that I was done. And then I would, start at the beginning and realize it's not done yet. Then I would say, you know, this I don't even know how important this chapter is, but I can't stop working. I keep coming back to this first page of this chapter. And then, you know, on day five or six, I struck onto something and I realized like, oh, this became much better than I expected it to be. This chapter is actually really good now and more important than I kind of recognize. I'm glad that I got stuck on it for a week. And so again, as far as the craft goes, I really do, not only do I sweat over it, but I enjoy it. That's one of the things I love so much about writing is just sort of digging into it, deep diving, getting lost in a paragraph or a sentence or a chapter, looking outside and realizing the sun's not up anymore and I have no idea where the day went. Like it's my favorite time to create. And even with the book that I'm working on right now, there's a part of me, I'm trying to be conscious of it, but there's a part of me I love working on this book so much that I'm starting to wonder like, am I not finishing it on purpose? Am I choosing not to call it done because I don't want it to be done? Because again, I know from experience, again, this is, I'm working on my sixth book, but I remember with my first novel, Inside the Outside, which incidentally, yesterday was the 12-year anniversary of publishing that book. 12 years isn't really a milestone, but the anniversary still stands. But I remember with that book, again, it was my first book. I spent about 5 or 6 years writing it. A lot of that time was just trying to figure out how to write a book. But I didn't fully appreciate how much I enjoyed the process because I was I was so excited just to finish the book. I wanted it to be done. I wanted to be able to call myself a writer. I wanted to publish it and get it down to the world. And I also had just like this fear in the back of my head that, you know, it's kind of irrational, but not really, that, you know, just whatever. I would be outside and I would get hit by a truck and I would never have published my book. So like I wanted it to be done and out there so then I could just take a deep breath and know that I was an author until after it was done and it was out in the world and I couldn't really work on it anymore. I realized, oh, I missed that. I didn't fully appreciate how much I enjoyed the process because I was so worried about just finishing the book. So ultimately with this book, I'm very conscious of, you know, like enjoy it. You stumbled onto a story that you really enjoy. I love living in this universe. I love visiting these characters. I love putting them in conflict and deadly situations, and exciting situations and humorous stuff. I really love it. And, you know, probably not unlike sending your kid off to college. I have no kids, but maybe it's like that. Sending your kid off to college, you're like, it's done now. They're out in the world and I should have appreciated it more. So I'm really savoring the process of this current book.
That's a pretty cool way of looking at it. You're talking about your creative process.
Yeah.
Can you get a little bit more detailed on when you sit down to write, what are you actually doing? Mm-hmm. You're sitting down at a desk traditionally, you know, typewriter. I mean, what are you actually doing?
Okay. Yeah. So I, the last several years I've done my writing on a laptop. I've got a MacBook Pro, but I've always, even before I had a MacBook, I've always done my writing on computers. If I had to, if the apocalypse was tomorrow and we no longer had electricity or gizmos or computers or whatever, I could write freehand, but it feels more natural for me to write on a computer, even a typewriter. Although when I was in junior high, my mom got me an electric typewriter because I asked for one because that was kind of the first time that I really had the idea that I might want to try writing. So we went to Sears and she got me an electric typewriter, which we couldn't afford, by the way. But she got me a typewriter and I had to, you know, promise not to tell my dad. If he's watching this interview right now, he might be finding this out for the first time that he bought me an electric typewriter when we couldn't actually afford it at the time. But they're great because, you know, they've always supported my writing and my passion for storytelling and being creative anyway. But anyway, so that was kind of the only time that I really tried writing on a typewriter. And I actually enjoyed that. But the first time that it ran out of ink, the ink ribbon, I tried to replace and I couldn't. And that was kind of the end of that. I just never learned how to replace. We didn't have YouTube to teach me how to do it. So really, and my theory I've always had for 20 years maybe. But my theory's kind of been that whatever medium a writer is primarily using when they kind of discover their love for writing, that's kind of what they'll do for the rest of their life. So like I've known writers who even in 2023 with all the technology in the world, like they'll still get, you know, a notepad and a pencil and, you know, that's how they want to do their writing. And, you know, they'll transcribe it onto a computer later, you know, almost under protest. Or if it's a fancier writer, you know, maybe they've got an assistant who'll type it up. But for me, my love for writing coincided with, we got our first, in my family, I say we, my family, it was like 1996 and we got our first computer. At the time, I imagine you remember, it was like, if you had a computer in the house, it was one and everybody used it. But, you know, so I was in college, I was doing my homework and I was writing on this computer. So because that was kind of where I think made an emotional connection to this craft, it also unwittingly sort of fused with a computer. So now I can't do it any differently. The closest I've come to sort of doing something else, it kind of relates to my last book, which was my short story collection, Dolph the Unicorn Killer and Other Stories. There was at least one story in that book where I think it was like a Sunday morning and I woke up and my eyes were still kind of, you know, blurry. And I was thinking about this book that I was working on, the short story collection, and I got this idea for a story. But I was in bed and I was kind of tired and I didn't quite have the gusto to actually get up and go to the computer and start to work out what I felt like was a good idea. So I just took out my phone and I opened up the notes app and I just used the microphone feature to speaking into the notes. And I just started, you know, out loud, not writing the story per se, but in some ways just kind of outlining the story and the idea of it and where I kind of imagined it would go and maybe some of the themes I could work with and even particular lines of dialogue that I heard that I thought would sort of be good in the story. And so I just, you know, spoke that into my notes. And then a few hours later, I took that out and They weren't great notes. It turns out I was more tired than I realized, but enough of the ideas were in there that I could sort of turn it into a story. But that's the closest that I've really come to doing something else. So for me, it's the laptop. And because it's a laptop, in terms of like my process, I'm not really married to any particular room. I used to be, you know, if I had a desktop, you know, and I couldn't move it around, then I'd start figuring, well, this is the room where I write. But once I started working on laptops, now I could write anywhere. So for example, just a couple of weeks ago, my wife was getting her hair done. It was a Saturday. So I went out with her while she was getting her hair done, but it was going to take a few hours. So I took my laptop with me while she was getting her hair done. I went to the mall. So I was walking around the mall, and then I found a nice table outside and took out the laptop and just started working on my, you know, my current story. And it was fantastic. And it was, you know, I could sort of be, you know, as long as I have my laptop, I can write anywhere, and I could get right into it. And there's no real block or warming up. I can just, you know, jump in and start writing.
Now, you mentioned the typewriter, and, you know, I can visualize that in my head, and I'm thinking to myself, if I ever sat down at a typewriter, I can type, but the problem is I can never get a thought out and be satisfied with it. I get to change it 200 times.
Yeah.
So to me, a computer by far would be the better choice for me.
Oh, that part too.
And you would think that speaking something into a recorder, I've tried that when writing songs or writing other things in the past, and
yeah,
it kind of works. If I'm driving down the road, I want to capture an idea, but I couldn't do the entire process like that.
Yeah.
So to me, a laptop, typing, you know, a mistake, go back or tweak. And you were talking about the details earlier and how long it's taking you to focus on one paragraph, or, you know, and you get in there. And I could see that, because I could write a paragraph and then I have the computer read it back to me. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, that doesn't quite sound like the way I meant it to sound. And then I start tweaking it. Mm-hmm. And I could spend plenty of time just going back and forth making changes like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the computer, yeah, for exactly the reasons you're saying, it's like, you know, just in terms of editing, it's just so much easier to put something on the page. I can look at it. I can, you know, I feel very much like Tom Cruise in Minority Report, and I'm just like moving stuff around. I could take this paragraph and put it there in that line. Well, that sounds much better. But this line, what if I put it there? Where even if it was on paper, you know, like maybe I can do a quick underline and draw an arrow and say, maybe put this part, but it, you know, and for somebody that they're probably happy to do that. But for me, it just makes so much sense for me to be on the computer. There's just so much more, you know, dexterity, as it were, in terms of, you know, being able to put stuff together. And of course, you know, in the last, you know, 15, 20 years with the internet becoming so available, like even like being at the mall, there was Wi-Fi, you know, everywhere. The mall had Wi-Fi, the various stores had Wi-Fi. So not only was I outside at the mall getting fresh air, but I also had access to the internet. If I had to do any matter of, you know, research, I would look something up or you know, whatever I needed access to. I can't imagine doing it any other way. And I also suspect that, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, there's going to be some gangbusters technology and people are going to be telling stories on it. And I'm going to be the old fogey. They're like, you still writing on a laptop? It's like, yeah, I can't change it. This is, that's my tool. That's my gimmick.
I do that with musicians. If I take a band or a musician into the studio and we record their album, people think you go in, you press the big red button, they play their music. At the end of it, you hit stop and you have a record. And some people might work like that. And I've been in some sessions that are actually like that. But I take it home and then I manipulate it. And like you said, I'm moving this part over here and I'm moving this part over there. Yeah. And let's go ahead and make this word sound like this and this one sound like that. And I really take the time to try to craft it and bring out the highlights of the story, because a song is nothing but a short story.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that you feel that emotion that the artist is trying to get across. So to me, editing is my favorite part of the entire process.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the exact same. You know, like when I do a first draft, like in my heart, I want it to be a perfect first draft, but I also know that it's a rough draft. And, you know, one of my favorite books, and I'm not alone in this, it's Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. Her book, Bird by Bird, it's a creative writing manual. Most anybody who loves creative writing or endeavors to learn it has probably encountered Bird by Bird. And if they haven't, I highly recommend it, because it's also just an extremely well-written book. It's very entertaining, very funny, but just a lot of really wonderful practical advice for storytelling and prose fiction. But one of the first chapters in the book is called The First Draft. And just she's acknowledging that, you know, give yourself permission. Know that it's not going to be perfect. It's not supposed to be perfect. And so over the years, it took me a while to embrace it because I'm sort of a perfectionist and I want the first words to come out of my mouth onto the page
to be gold
and be golden. But, you know, I've embraced that's not the case. And so now when I write a first draft, I treat it, you know, like a block of clay. I'm just giving myself something to work with, but I can't work with it. And yeah, I can't edit it. I can't sculpt it until I've got something there. So now when I write a first draft, I really give myself permission to just put everything on the page, every idea, every good idea, every bad idea. I'll explore every wrong turn, just get everything on there. Now I've got this nice block of clay that I can work with, and I can start whittling it down, and I can find the gold. And you know, again, with the book I'm currently working on, even having said that, I thought the first draft was much better than it actually was. And then when I started the second draft, I'm reading and reading and thinking like, this has got to go. I can't keep this. And pretty soon I'm like, I think the first draft was somewhere in the area of 110 to 120,000 words. And then I think by the time I finished the second draft, it was somewhere in the area of like, you know, maybe 80 to 90,000 words, which is, you know, the difference of probably a couple hundred pages once it's actually, you know, formatted and everything. And by the way, talking about process, generally speaking, there's two types of writers. You know, I'm sure you could, somebody can disagree with me and make a longer list, but they would probably recognize I'm telling the truth. There's two types of writers in the writing game. We call them pantsers and plotters. So the plotters are writers who like to outline. They like to plot. They like to figure everything out, and then they write it. And then pantsers, they write by the seat of their pants. So they start on sentence one, and they figure it out from there. So probably the most famous example of a pantser is the writer I mentioned earlier, which is Stephen King. So for as wild and crazy and creative and well-structured as his stories, you know, generally are, he's a pantser. Although ironically, the one book that he did outline is the book Insomnia, the book I mentioned, and he actually didn't like the process. So what he likes to do is sentence one, write it down, and he's just going to discover the book as it comes along, which is great if you love it. For me, that gives me way too much anxiety. Like, I want to get a nice bird's eye view. I want to figure it out, look at the story arc. I mean, you know, I generally write my book in three parts, which again is sort of, for me, it's an allusion to, you know, the three-part structure that you very often get in movies and sometimes TV shows, depending on, you know, who's working on it. And, you know, like, I want to create my arc and have, you know, the rising action and figure out the climax and the closing action and like all that stuff ahead of time. But for me also, even though I like to have an outline, right, I structure what's going to happen and the various places where it's going to happen and you know, just figuring out, you know, setups and payoffs, you know, like if I need this thing to happen in chapter seven, so let me set up this scene in chapter three. And let's say, okay, they need a gun in chapter five. So let me introduce the gun in chapter two. And I like to figure all that stuff out. And then I could start writing it. And then it gives me a lot less anxiety because now I can dive into that chapter. I don't have to keep track of anything. When I finish that chapter, I can go back to my roadmap. My outline is like, okay, what comes next? Okay, this makes sense. Let me work on this. Even with the outline, I can become, you know, Tom Cruise on Minority Report again and figure out like, oh, chapter six makes a lot more sense as chapter eight. And then chapter, you know, 17, let me move this backwards. And actually chapters 25 and 26, they shouldn't be separate. Let me put those two guys together. And actually chapter three, I thought that was a nice big chapter. That actually should be three different chapters. And I can, you know, I can see it from my nice bird's eye view. Where if I was writing like Stephen King, again, it would give me way too much anxiety to try to keep all that stuff straight. So, you know, so I have my outline, but even though I have an outline, I still give myself room to play jazz. So maybe chapter three, I'll have bullet points. Like these things need to happen in this chapter because these three things are going to set up what happens in, you know, later chapters and in the bigger story. But along with those bullet points, I give myself room to play and discover and, you know, maybe I fumble into a scene I wasn't expecting and I like, and it kind of grows from there. And then, you know, like maybe just for example, I'll just make this up. I haven't actually written this, but you know, let's say I've got, I don't know why I keep doing a hypothetical chapter three, but let's say hypothetical chapter three, the character has to go into a liquor store because the liquor store is going to be held up at gunpoint. So that this is going to be a very important incident that's going to set up the rest of the story. And so while my character is in the liquor store, I realize like, oh, somebody should work behind the counter. So let me put somebody behind the counter, but they're not important. Well, let my character say something to them. That way they can, you know, engage them and whatever. Maybe I could plant a seed in their dialogue. And then maybe once they start talking a little bit, as I start sort of describing this character, I start to like them. And I wasn't planning on this person behind the counter. They weren't in the outline, but because I was playing jazz, now I really like this character a lot. And actually, you know what? If I keep this character around, they actually solved that problem I had in chapter 7 because I needed somebody for that one part of the story. And you know what? Let's keep them in there. And so, you know, stuff like that, you know, maybe I discover a character, or I take a left turn and I find a subplot I wasn't looking for. I give myself room to be creative, but I still have the outline that sort of, you know, kind of keeps me honest. But again, even the outline can change. My preference, and it doesn't always work out this way, if I can make it happen, I like to figure out the ending as soon as possible, because the sooner I know the ending, I kind of have something to work towards, both in the outline, both in the story. I know the things that I need to build up. I know the seeds I need to plant. I know where I need to put the setups and the payoff to build up to this ending. Sometimes I have the ending where I know it exactly what I want it to be. Sometimes I only have just kind of like a vague, you know, kind of picture of the ending. So again, with the book that I'm working on right now, it's a circus novel. I call it a circus novel. It's sort of a low fantasy circus novel about this college professor who, you know, gets recruited to join a traveling circus after he discovers he has a supernatural ability. So they invite him to be in the circus and to incorporate his supernatural ability into their circus. And so a big theme in the story is fire. It affects both the actual story, but it's also sort of a thematic undertone. So in my head, I knew that the final scene was going to involve I pictured a big fire in the big top, and my character was going to be in the middle of this big fire, and it's a big dramatic scene. And the only problem was I didn't know how he was going to survive the climax, because I want him to, but I couldn't figure out how he's going to survive. So I was like, well, I'll figure it out at some point, fingers crossed. And then at some point, the longer I was going without figuring out how I was going to end the story, I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't survive. I don't know anymore, because I can't quite figure out, what to do with this guy. So it's something like that. Eventually I figured out the ending. So I won't spoil it here for anybody who wants to, read the book in the future, but I think I found a nice way to end the story, but that's something that happens to me kind of a lot. I also have a vampire trilogy. So it's, three books is a trilogy, but even in that one, it was a similar situation. So in that book, I created this big sort of uber vampire, just the most dangerous vampire I could think of. And I did such a good job creating this sort of uber dangerous vampire that I, as the storyteller, actually couldn't figure out how my hero was going to defeat the vampire in a reasonable way, in a way that the reader could accept, because the reader was going to, they were going to recognize that this vampire was super dangerous. And how could my heroes, there was actually a couple heroes, possibly defeat this guy? And so I spent months, sweating over it, feeling anxious about it. So yeah, it's the vampire and the hunter trilogy. Book one is the vampire, the hunter, and the girl. Book two is the vampire, the hunter, and the witch. And the book three is the vampire, the hunter, and Frank. And so after writing the book for a little while, I started to think maybe the heroes don't win in this book, because I genuinely can't figure out a reasonable way that they could actually beat this super uber vampire. And then once I did stumble onto an idea that I thought could work, then I could relax, and then I could really dig into the story, because now I see how the ending's gonna go. And currently, I've got an idea for my next book already in my head. I've already spent a good deal of time preparing that book and writing down ideas and setting up certain characters and plots and themes and the things of that nature. But with that book, thankfully, I see the ending as clearly as I'm looking at your handsome face right now. So I know once it's time for me to write that book, I'll have, I can fully relax and just build towards this wonderful ending that's already in my noggin. That was going to be a horror novel, by the way, involving werewolves.
Do you write it down now so you remember it when you come back to it?
Absolutely, yeah. So with that one, I have this software that I've had it for years, but I've never engaged with it a lot. It's called Scrivener, and Scrivener is fantastic. And so it's a fantastic software where you can, you know, jot down your ideas. It's essentially, if you can imagine, you know, go into Home Depot, Office Depot, getting a pack of, you know, cards, and then you're writing your ideas on the cards to try to, you know, like organize yourself. So Scrivener's, they literally have a feature where, you know, you can write on a card and you pin it to a digital cork board. It allows you to outline. It allows you to save, websites or links or articles, which you could save them. I could bookmark in any page that I want to remember, which is usually what I would do. But in Scrivener, now it's so convenient where it's like, okay, this particular part of Scrivener, I've got a folder where I'm for this part of the story where I'm just focused on setting and place and the environment and anything that, that's going to involve, you know, whatever, like it's going to be set in the Pacific Northwest. So I know I'm going to sort of spend some time getting a little bit into just sort of nature and trees and forests. I was doing research and pulling, you know, web pages with stuff like that. But now with Scrivener, I can organize that stuff. So anything I need to about forests and trees, I'm going to put the web pages in there, or anything about werewolves or wolf mythology or witchcraft or anything like that, I can put them in here. And it's a great software that keeps me organized. And I've played with it before, but for my future book, once I finish my circus book, it'll be the first time that I've like used it almost exclusively to kind of work on a book. And you can also write in there too. I might draw the line there just because, not unlike working on a computer, I'm also very much attached to, you know, writing in my Microsoft Word files, and every chapter gets its own file. And I've got my system. I've been using it for years. It brings me great comfort. So I'm not looking to stray from that. But Scrivener is a wonderful way. It sort of intuitively allows me to organize a story in a way that I was already doing, except it makes it easier because it's this nice one-stop shop. And it's a software. I forget how much it costs, but it's one of those softwares where you only have to buy it once, and then you've got it. So I literally bought it, I think, a couple of years ago and just only decided, you know, let me give it a try. Turns out I love it. So yeah, I know a lot of screenwriters use it, but also I think anybody, any storyteller could probably find some use with Scrivener. I'm not getting paid, by the way. They have no idea I exist.
That's funny. I do something similar with Word files. I create a Word file for each individual chapter or section that I put together because I don't know if they're going to end up in the same order at the end.
Absolutely.
Or I write them all individually and then I start planning, put the order together, and then, like you said, just start moving things around.
Yeah. You got to become Tom Cruise. You got to give yourself the room to do that. I think the first time, honestly, probably my first book, as I think about it, I wrote the whole book in one Word file. And technically, Inside the Outside is my first novel, but I have an unpublished novel that I wrote before that, which in large part served the purpose of, it kind of taught me how to write a book. Just going through the experience of writing a book was very educational, even though I didn't end up publishing it, just going through the process of writing it. But that particular book, I think it was all one Word file. And it was tricky because, you know, if I was working on a later chapter and I wanted to revisit an earlier chapter, I was scrolling through and trying to pin it down. And then it took me a while to figure out if I just make these their own chapters, it's going to make my life a lot easier. And it has. And then, of course, I figured out outlining, because even with Inside the Outside, I wasn't outlining yet, which is wild to me, because that particular book, I very much was, you know, I was a pantser for that one. I had an idea. I had a clear idea of sort of what the story was about, but I also didn't truly know how to write a book yet. So that one, I was like, I don't know, I guess I just get in there and start writing. And to a large degree, that book, you were very kind to mention that I'm an award-winning writer. So that book, I won my first couple of awards for that first book. And I feel very lucky that it turned out well, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was kind of, as far as storytelling goes, largely writing on instinct. Like I didn't have a real grasp of, you know, the character arcs or story arcs or subplots or, you know, supporting characters. And, you know, I didn't really have a handle on that in a substantive way, but I genuinely think that's where just a lifetime of watching television and movies. It was in my subconscious. It was in here somewhere. So even though I was just kind of riding by the seat of my pants, a structure kind of found itself, in spite of me not knowing to look for it, kind of found itself on the page. And so with that particular book, you know, the first half of the book, then, you know, like if somebody reads Inside the Outside Now, the first half of the book is very close to the first draft. I tightened it up along the way, but it very much is represented kind of how I wrote it at the time. The second half of the book, in the first draft, it didn't work. And I couldn't figure out why it didn't work. If I knew more about story structure and story arcs and things of that nature, I would have figured it out much sooner. But because I didn't have that quite yet, I couldn't put my finger on why the second half of the book wasn't working. And then, you know, a friend of mine, James Brown, who was also, he was my college professor, you know, 20 years ago, and he's become a mentor and a friend since then. He was generous enough to read that first draft. And I don't even think I told him I had concerns with the second half. His feedback basically was, first half of the book is golden. I love it. The second half of the book, it kind of loses its way. And so I was like, oh, I'm glad you said that. I'm not glad that you didn't like the second half, but I'm glad you said that because I felt the same way. I just didn't know how to fix it. And so, you know, as a good professor and mentor, and also he's a brilliant writer himself with a lot more experience than me. So he was able to very quickly identify sort of what went missing and where it went afoul and how I could sort of right the ship and just gave me, you know, just excellent advice. And he didn't even give me like story ideas. He could have if he wanted to. He's fantastic. But just you know, just in a big picture way, just, you know, help. Again, I hadn't been in his class for years, but it was just a wonderful experience to sort of, you know, sit under the learning tree for a minute. You know, he was able to explain what wasn't working and I got it very quickly. And from there, when I wrote the second half of that book, I outlined it only because I thought this will be easier to organize my ideas. I don't want to get this wrong. So I outlined the second half of the book, wrote it, and then I realized, oh, that was a good idea. Why didn't I do that all along? So anyway, finished the book, published it. I expected the world to hate it because I don't know, that was the bully in my brain saying, this is terrible. Nobody wants to read it. And was just gobsmacked by the praise and good nature and how much people love the book. And it has, I think it has upwards of 200 reviews on Amazon, many of them very good. Although, with any of my books, if you're ever bored or having a bad day, go out of your way to look for the 1-star ratings because some of them are very creative. I don't mind. Sometimes I don't mind going out of my way to read the bad reviews, not because they make me feel better, but some of them kind of are funny. But anyway, that first book got a lot of high praise, which was so exciting for me. And then, you know, people internationally were discovering the book, which blew my mind. So folks in like Italy and Australia were reading the book and China, I believe. And just, I was, it was, you know, places where I never imagined the book ever being relevant at all. Folks were finding it. In fact, one time, I used to use Twitter a lot when I was sort of marketing and promoting and trying to connect with readers. And I came across a book blogger in Ireland, and she wrote a very nice review of the book and she put it on Twitter. And I was touched by it. And I was appreciative. I appreciated it so much. So I responded to her tweet, not thinking much of it. I just wanted to, you know, send a thank you, let her know I appreciated it. And her response was, you know, oh my God, it's you. Ego-wise, that made me feel good because I never thought of myself as a person where somebody would be sort of excited for me to sort of, I feel that way. In fact, a few months ago, again, on Twitter, I tweeted about one of my favorite authors, Jasper Ford, because I'd read one of his more recent books and I loved the book a whole bunch. So I pulled a quote off of the book that I really loved and I put that on Twitter, and Jasper Ford responded to that quote because he also liked that particular quote. I was a fanboy. I was like, oh my God, it's you. I can't believe you just responded to me. But anyway, yeah. So I was, you know, so this book that I feel so lucky, one that I finished it and one that people loved it so much, but also that it turned out as well as it did, because I almost now, so many years later, I know so much more about writing and storytelling that I kind of, I don't know. I almost feel like I recognize all the ways that it probably could have gone wrong, but it didn't, and it ended up being good. I'm very proud of it. I don't know. Ironically, I guess if I went back in time, I guess I would have approached that book the way I approach my books now. But then also, if I did that, I probably wouldn't have ended up with that particular book. So I can also sort of accept that as well.
Well, that's kind of cool that you mentioned that too, getting mentored and then having somebody recognize you. It's always good to be recognized, which kind of leads us nicely into this section we call Unsung Heroes, where we take time to recognize somebody who's behind the scenes who doesn't typically get a little light shined on them. Do you have anybody you'd like to shine a little light on?
Oh, I would love to. Several people I could think of, and I could even mention a few if you don't mind. But
please.
The first that comes to mind, and it was my very first English professor, my first year in college. Her name is S.K. Murphy. She's also a fantastic writer. And I know Kay well enough. Again, she's one of those teacher mentor friends who I haven't let her out of my life. And so, you know, that was 1996, 97. So she's still a friend of mine to this day. And I have a very good instinct that not only is she going to watch this interview, but she's probably literally crying right now that I mentioned her name, because she gets very emotional when I talk about her in this way. But as my first English professor, she was the first person who encouraged me to be a writer. And in her class, I never really thought of myself as being particularly good at writing or being good at English or anything of that nature. And when I signed up for her class, it was like your basic freshman English 101 type class. And I was kind of terrified to take the class. And, you know, the first essay that I wrote for her, I didn't know what I was doing. And I assumed that I was going to fail the class very quickly. So the assignment was to write an autobiographical essay. So essentially, I can look back on it now and realize we were kind of writing a memoir. So I wrote an essay about sort of this wild story that I'd kind of experienced in high school. I won't spoil it too much, but it involved me working as an ice cream scooper at Thrifties, and there were some Ocean's 11 elements where I was doing things that I shouldn't have been doing while being an ice cream scooper at Thrifties. So I wrote this essay for her, assuming all the while I'm doing a terrible job and she's going to fail me immediately. And so we turned the essays in, and I think maybe on the next class, you know, she told us that she wanted to share one of the essays that she thought was a good example. So she starts reading this essay, and, you know, I was a little bit, slow to catch up on what was happening. So she read the first couple of sentences, and my first thought was like, oh, what a wild coincidence. Somebody else has an essay that sounds just like mine. Genuinely didn't occur to me that she was going to, you know, read my essay because it stood out to her. And then, you know, then I realized she's reading my essay, and then it became this the most amazing experience, because she's reading this thing that I wrote. And again, I'm storytelling. It was very instinctual. I didn't quite recognize that's what I was doing. But she's reading this story that I wrote about myself. And the class, it was the best possible experience, because anything that was supposed to be funny, they were laughing. Anything that was supposed to be tense, there was genuine gasps in the room. And then they got to the end, and I could see the class going on this roller coaster of this essay / story that I wrote that my teacher was so kind to share, you know, with them. And then after class, when she turned the essays back into us, on the back of mine, on the last page, she had one of those teacher notes that, you know, I was a college professor for 10 years. And so, you know, so we like to leave a little note on the last page to, you know, give you some feedback or encouragement or, you know, whatever. So she left me a note that I'm convinced that she didn't think too much of and probably had no idea how much it was going to affect me. But it just a quick note that said, hey, you're pretty good at this. You should think about studying English and being a writer. And for her, it was probably an afterthought. For me, it was everything. Because when I was in college that first year, I had no path. I had no idea what to do with myself. So she had no idea that she gave me a path. And so I was so excited. I was like, okay, so I think I might be good at something. And this thing that I actually enjoyed, and these people seem to like it. And so then that from there, I ended up studying English and becoming an English major. And then I got into writing. And then 6 or 7 years later, purely on accident, I found her online. She was a member of the California Writers Club of the Inland Empire branch of the Inland Empire, you know, where we lived. She was the treasurer. And so I saw her name and I thought, oh, this sounds like that teacher who inspired me to be a writer, but I have no idea if it's her, but there's an email. So I wrote her an email and I literally started, I don't know if you're the person that I think you are. If you're not, I apologize. But if you are, here's what you did for me. Here's how you inspired me. Here's the thing I've done since then. I think by that point, I'd got my bachelor's degree. I'd written a few short stories. I had a few small publications. I think I might have won my first small literary award. She got back to me right away. Of course, let me know that she was in tears, because that's kind of her MO is, you know, she gets very emotional when I sort of embarrass her like this. And then we went to dinner and I knew, whether she knew it or not, I knew she was going to be sort of in my life forever. And she still is. So she's her and really any teacher, like James Brown, who I mentioned earlier, the teachers who genuinely affected me, I never forget them. And those two in particular, S.K. Murphy and James Brown, I dedicated my short story collection to them. So anybody who happens to see that book, if you open it and it says for Jim and Kay, it's for them. And then, you know, and I think at the end of the book, once you finish the last story, I give you a little bit of insight into those two and how important they were and how crazy impactful they were, that if you talked to them right now, I can almost guarantee you they wouldn't take credit. Like, they would probably say, in fact, I've tried to give them credit. And you know, both of them would say something to the effect of, you are going to be fine. You are going to be successful. We just happen to intersect with you. And I tell them, no, that was not going to happen. I intersected with you at the exact time I needed to meet you. And genuinely, for the rest of my life, I'm going to be grateful to those two. And really just any teacher who touched my lives, and there was lots of them, but especially as far as my writing goes and my career as a writer, those two were indispensable, unsung heroes.
Now, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Martin is nothing if not a character, and I really enjoy talking with him. So please join me in giving him a big thanks for taking the time to share his stories with us, and thank you for taking the time to hang with me here. I really do appreciate it. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. You can do that and find the links to everything mentioned over at jfranzi.com/episode20. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Jay Franzi Show. Make sure you visit us at jfranzi.com. Follow, connect, and say hello. This episode has been brought to you by VR Knives, your source for 100% custom knives made by a true rock star. So, if you're in the market for a new piece of art, reach out to VR Knives. 407-421-5528. 407-421-5528.